Terry Edwards with BBS Radio, and the show is Sound Health. Thank you for joining us. This show is designed to bring you information and guests to support you, the audience, in your quest for self-health. The music you just heard, I Like to Teach the World to Sing in Perfect Harmony, is kind of a favorite. That rendition was from The Seekers. The song was originally a commercial, considered one of the best of all times, the most effective commercial. I don't drink the stuff, so I'm not going to talk about the product, but I love the song. And Dr. Swanson has certainly created some controversy that needs some harmony brought to it with his flat-out Tell It Like It Is books. And Dr. Swanson's going to be our guest tonight. His areas of interest run from the paranormal to hard physics, from earth sciences to astronomy. He's a fascinating person with a fascinating theory of the universe, and we'll hear from him in just a few minutes. We've met each other on speaking platforms, been on speaking platforms together, kind of talked to each other in the hall, and we're familiar with each other's work. There's a strong connection with his ideas about the universe and frequency and how it all comes together. And we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about his book, The Synchronized Universe. And we're going to get a hint of his new book that's yet to be published. Dr. Swanson, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Sherry. Great to be here.
That metaphor of creating the world in perfect harmony, that was a group of children on a hilltop. I think they filmed it in England. And it was about bringing the world together in harmony and frequency. Do you think that's ever going to happen?
I think we're getting close. I think one thing we're learning from all the environmental problems that we're, you know, learning about and see how rapidly our global warming and things like that are developing is that we need to get synchronized. We need to get harmonious, and we need to do it pretty quickly because the old metaphor of fighting and exploiting nature is just not working for us. We need to work harmoniously with our environment to be able to make a world that works. So I think it's up to our survival, really.
Well, it's more than just being compatible with our environment. We need to be compatible with each other and compatible with our scientific theories. And some of the things you've done just poked holes in a lot of them.
Well, you know, one of the, as I'm sure you know, one of the really exciting areas of discovery the last few years has been the whole acupuncture system and an understanding of how the human body works, how the cells talk to each other, that DNA itself vibrates at many frequencies and both receives and sends signals throughout the body from cell to cell, so that it creates these holograms, these pictures in three dimensions that tell all the cells how to coordinate, how to specialize, how to make an arm and a leg and a fingernail and an eyelash. And these are mysteries that have puzzled biologists for a long, long time, and now we're learning that it's this harmonious, synchronized interaction of the cells in the body and even the molecules in the body that allow us to hold together and to grow. And you know, and the same principle that works to make life and to make our bodies healthy and talking to each other also probably connects us to each other and to the rest of the universe. And that's one of the really exciting things that we're starting to learn about.
Have you heard of James Jim Jeske's work out of UCLA?
Well, I looked up his website yesterday, and I saw a little bit about it. I'm far from an expert. I just saw a little bit of it, though.
He and his whole group have actually measured the frequencies coming off cells, proving that the cells create a frequency and transport frequencies. And he made the statement in one of his papers a couple years ago, if we could only figure out what these frequencies mean, it would be the end of ill health and disease. And that's one of the things that we're working on here at the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology.
Right. And you probably know about the work of Marina Shaduri in Georgia, part of the old Soviet Union, who has been able to look at the frequencies that are coming off of the acupoints when you do Curlian photography, and has actually been able to find that those frequencies add together. You know, that's one of the things that the Germans, there's a big German research program, as I'm sure your listeners probably know about, by a man named Popp, P-O-P-P,
yeah,
who's been doing this wonderful work for 20 years or so on biophotons, that all the cells emit light, and the light is synchronized. It is really coordinated, so the light from different cells comes out step by step by step together, so the cells are talking to each other just like a laser. So that was sort of one of the first clues that our cells in our body do talk to each other. They are coordinated, and there's something, you know, obviously the question is why? Why is it that cells in different parts of the body would want to act like a laser? Why would they want to be able to vibrate in step with each other? And the answer now is turning out to be to make a hologram. I mean, that's one answer anyway. If you want to make a body, a three-dimensional picture of the body with all the details about where the liver is and where the heart is and what they're doing, then holography is a way to take coherent signals from different parts of the body and actually make a projection of what the body is supposed to look like. So it's one way that our cells do talk to each other and coordinate to kind of get on the same picture to make a healthy body. So I think this is one answer, that this is confirming what Jim Juski is finding out, that it's an amazing system.
Well, it's like the body working in perfect harmony.
Exactly.
It's like the song. I read an article about acupuncture, about how they had taken some kind of a phosphorus dye and put it in an acupuncture point and mm-hmm. then followed it on some kind of special camera and watched it move all around the body. And then they took this same phosphorus dye and put it in a non-acupuncture point, and it stayed right where it was.
Yeah, and that work was originally done in the early 60s by a Korean named Kim Bong Han, and there were a couple of papers he published, and they never got much press in the West, and then there's sort of a 20-year hiatus, and now very recently, the last 3 or 4 years, the Koreans have gotten active again, and they're showing, yes, you can trace the acupuncture meridians that way. They carry a fluid with them, and you can actually trace these dyes and trace the acupuncture meridians. But more than that, they've been able to actually photograph them now. They actually have micro photographs of the various acupuncture meridians inside the body, and so they're really proving the reality of these ducts. And when you actually look into an acupuncture meridian, which is a very fine tubule, you find these molecules inside the acupuncture meridians. And these look kind of like some of the nuclear material in cells. So they have that same kind of intelligence to be able to respond to these high-frequency DNA signals that are making up this same hologram. So they're kind of part of this whole communication network. So it's pretty exciting to watch all this be uncovered.
I don't see how anybody could deny acupuncture if they'd ever read that article. It's incredible. Your background is just incredible. Educated as a physicist at MIT in Princeton, your thesis was on experimental cosmology and astronomy. You have pages and pages and pages of awards. Your principal interest, it says on your bio, is a unifying field theory, the so-called theory of everything. which could explain the universe at the deepest possible level. Now, here at BBS Radio, we have pretty savvy listeners, but you're going to have to break that down. What is the theory of everything?
Well, when I got into all this stuff because of curiosity, you know, and it's the old story of curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction brought him back. So it's satisfaction and curiosity that has motivated me to try to understand some of these things. And when I got into physics, I did so thinking that I would get all the answers. How does the universe work? What's matter? How do the stars interact with us? And I thought I would have all my questions that came out of my childhood answered, and it would be this wonderful, beautiful picture. And I was very disappointed to find out, as I went through all this education, that the picture seemed pretty superficial. It seemed like they made measurements in the lab and they would gin up some theory that would, you know, produce the same answers, but it didn't seem like there was a real deep connection. So I kept searching and trying to develop my own ideas, and in the mid-80s I came across remote viewing. And the problem with remote viewing is that once you realize that it's real, you realize that all of our physics has some big holes in it, that we're missing some really important things, because our current scientific paradigm can't be true if remote viewing happens, and now we don't know that it does. So that was part of my first book, was just to pull together best evidence for a lot of different types of anomalous things that go on in the universe, and try to see, okay, what does happen in our universe, first of all, just what's the list of all the weird things that go on that our science can't explain? And when you get done with that, then you kind of know what the real physics ought to look like. So that's kind of how I got started. There's one central question, or one central problem with current science as I see it, that kind of sums up a lot of things. Way back in the 1920s, when scientists were learning about the atom, okay, and atoms give off light, and they were figuring out, okay, they must have these electrons that fly around the outside, orbiting, kind of like planets do, and the middle is the nucleus, and that's kind of like the sun. And they were making this picture, and the problem is that in that picture, the electrons that are flying around should be radiating energy like crazy, which means they'll lose energy, and the whole atom will collapse, it'll fizzle, okay? It's not stable. And they realized that's a problem. We got to fix that. And Niels Bohr won the Nobel Prize for fixing it, and he kind of invented quantum mechanics in the process. He kind of made this rule that the electron has to go through these waves, and the waves have to match up after one pass around the orbit. And those waves kind of became the secret to making quantum mechanics. But the problem is that they ended up with a picture in which an atom will be stable all by itself. So you have an atom sitting in space, and these rules give you a way to say the atom will just sit there, it's not going to lose energy, it'll obey all the laws we know about. I think what we missed out is that the real picture is now turning out to be that atom is not just sitting there. It actually is radiating energy out into the cosmos at a very high rate. And there's energy in space that's coming in from the cosmos and hitting that atom and being absorbed. So it's an interaction process. And so nothing really operates by itself. Everything is connected to everything else. And that's the real picture that's starting to emerge. That's where the zero-point energy of the vacuum comes in. And this connectedness is the secret to understanding how radionics works, how energy healing works, how paranormal processes work. And that's been left out of physics until now, and that's what I'm trying to help to put into physics again.
Is that all in your book, The Synchronized Universe, or is this in the new book?
Quite a bit of it is in The Synchronized Universe. It's basically 12 chapters with kind of best evidence for different types of phenomena that don't fit our current physics, and yet we believe that they really occur. ESP, remote viewing, things like that. And then the last chapter is sort of a sketch of how we could make a theory, how we could take our current physics not have to change it too much, and so it stays consistent with all the wonderful, you know, successes that our science has, but change it enough to be able to include these effects that I just talked about. So it's kind of a sketch of how we could do that. So it's a roadmap to where our science needs to go. And I've talked to a lot of people who have read my book who are psychics or they're healers or they've had paranormal experiences or, you know, they're sensitive in some way or other. And a lot of them are very grateful. They like the book because it grounds their experiences in science, you know. They don't have to think they're crazy anymore because there's a lot of evidence to back up what they've experienced. And it's actually a roadmap for how our science could get to where it can understand what they experience. So that's kind of that's the first book, and that's when that's the second book I'm working on now is focusing more on healing, and that's not going to be out until probably January, February. It's on the science of healing, and it focuses on the one element that the first book kind of lightly touches, and that's called subtle energy. When you have a pranic healer, someone doing Reiki, someone sending energy to someone, there's some kind of exchange there of information and energy. And that something is probably the key to what makes paranormal processes possible. So that's what the second book is about.
We've done studies on that and taken vocal prints before a session and then after a Reiki session,
uh-huh.
And their voice prints are almost identical afterwards. It's awesome to watch.
Wow.
I looked up your Synchronized Universe publication on Amazon, and there is just a wonderful, wonderful review. I'd just like to read a bit of it.
Sure.
This is a book I purchased several years ago, and I probably read it over 36 times.
Oh.
The pages are worn out on it from me reading it so many times. Dr. Claude Swanson, a doctor in physics, delves deeply into the possibility of all aspects of paranormality. I don't know if that's a word. The collective consciousness, prophecies, ghosts, the afterlife, remote viewing, parallel realities, levitation, and teleportation. The list goes on and on. He tackles the issues from a scientific standpoint, proving that many of these myths are nothing of the sort. They have been proven time and time again to be real in a scientific laboratory. This book is absolutely mind-blowing. And Dr. Swanson is to be commended for having the courage to step up and go where many scientists refuse to step. Have other scientists called you a kook because of this?
No, I sort of know where they stand. In terms of trying to change how people think, I think it's best to talk to those who are probably most open-minded first. And the problem with most mainstream scientists is they haven't seen this data. They read their physics journals, and their physics journals don't even allow this type of material to be published. Okay, so and plus that there's some of their weekly newsletters and things that the American Journal of Physics passes out have diatribes against paranormal and, you know, anomalous type phenomena. So a lot of mainstream physicists are kind of braced to be very skeptical of this stuff. And, you know, I'm trying to focus on first are people who are open-minded, who want to understand, and trying to put the data, the evidence out there so that anybody who wants to, I mean, there are some mainstream scientists who I've talked to who do like this material, but usually they have to kind of come to it first with some some open-mindedness that it's possible that these paradigms need to be changed. So I'll tackle the mainstream physics later.
But everything starts with an idea. It starts with our own consciousness. Yes, the data convinces people, but it's an idea that spawns all of that information and research.
Well, I remember, Sherry, the first time I heard about remote viewing and what I remember how my mind reacted, because when you're trained in a profession like physics, you have a lot of years that you've devoted, you know, classes you took, tests you took, and then I know that after you take the theory, then you go into the laboratory, you do the experiments, and you see that the experiments verify the theory. So you say, well, I've seen it for myself. I believe this. This has got to be the way it is, you know. And there's never any questioning that kind of comes up in that whole process. So when you get educated, you have a real kind of rock-solid belief that this has to be the way it is. And what I realized later is that if we had instead gone to look at some anomalous areas, if we'd gone to a haunted house and made some measurements there, you know, or taken some areas where there were high anomalies, we would have seen that our physics theories weren't working out so well. But that never comes up in a normal education, and so it's your brain has to go through this strange period when it's has these two impossible beliefs, and it's trying to figure out how to, you know, which one is real and how to work that out. So I do sympathize with anyone who, you know, who is trained in mainstream science and then is trying to understand these things. If you haven't had some kind of direct experience or something that shakes you up, mm-hmm. you know, so like an existence proof, then you can kind of go along blissfully ignorant, you know.
Well, some of the times we try to describe our scientists as really left-brained, mm-hmm. and they need all this data. You know, I think they need it because they don't have the courage to believe. And I really think they're much more sensitive than the right-brained people. They're just standing behind all the data.
Yeah, and if they get some different data, if they try looking in a different journal, you know, or try going out of their field a little bit and risk the ridicule, you know, or whatever might happen, and I do meet these people occasionally. You know, there are, little by little, people are being softened up, and the younger generation comes up watching shows about the paranormal. I mean, people like John Edward and things mm-hmm. like that. And, you know, it opens up a question mark in people's minds. And once you have that questioning, then I think that the rest can follow. But, you know, one other thing that I wanted to say is that I start out the Synchronized Universe talking about the Hopi prophecy. You know, there's this wonderful prophecy rock in Hopi land in Arizona that shows this future timeline for the planet. And basically it's been interpreted as saying that we sort of mainstream Western white people are living with our heads and our bodies detached from one another, which means that our intellectual mind and the physical world are not really in communication with each other. And in this prophecy, which has been around for a long, long time, there are events that are prophesied as World War One and World War Two that have happened. And what the elders say is that there's another event in this timeline that we're coming up on now, which is World War Three and very serious environmental destruction. And what we have to do is get our heads and our bodies back reintegrated. We have to get the left brain and the right brain talking to each other so that our intuitive side and our rational side are in communication. And that's really what we need to do to be able to get through this coming period in a, you know, in a healthy, happy way. And so one of the goals of my book, Synchronized Universe, is to try to show that the scientific view is not antithetical to, it's not against the spiritual view or the psychic and paranormal phenomena. There's actually a way to understand that they're all part of the same thing. We're all connected, and these phenomena are all, you know, part of the universe. So that's one of my goals, I guess, in trying to do this.
Well, one of the ideas of psychic ability is knowing something you know but not knowing how you know. It's like in health, when they can't explain it, they call it spontaneous remission. So if you're defining how people know this, then they're not going to be able to lump it over, oh, well, that's just psychic or paranormal. And like you said, it really takes a personal experience of seeing a ghost or having something happen to get people up and running. We're supposed to be taking callers. Let me give the numbers. You have a chance to ask Dr. Swanson any question in the entire universe, because that's what we're talking about. So the number is 877-876-5227 in the U.S. and 888-815-9756 in Canada. The direct line is 530 876-3222. And we have two email lines open for you, radio@vocalprofiling.com. And what reminded me of that, we just got a question. I guess it's a regular listener. And the other one is soundhealth@soundhealth.org. And you can ask Dr. Swanson a question. And the question that came in from a listener, this is Wayne. Do you think everything is required because we are already predestined to who and what we are?
Do I think everything is required? Does that mean, like, is the future fixed? Is that what that means?
Or? Yes, I think so. That everything that happens is supposed to happen, I guess.
You know, I used to believe that. Maybe because of my scientific background, I used to kind of believe the future was just kind of hardwired and determined. And there are some prophets and some psychics who are pretty good at predicting the future. But one of the things that I have changed my mind about, and I've done it from a lot of research, is that the future is not fixed. That our minds are tremendously powerful at affecting the physical reality, the world that we're in, and we can really change things by intention and by putting thoughts out and holding them. I have another little website I set up for synchronized prayer because I did realize, and there's lots of data now to show this, that when people pray together or meditate together or put that intention out there in a very firm way, that it really does have power to shift the future timeline. So I think that's one of the things that it's important for everyone to learn and to realize, and it's one way we can help to help to improve the timeline that we're on so we can get through some of these issues and problems.
Do you think it's just intention or there's more to it?
Well, I think it's. I don't have all the answers, first of all, but I think it's visualization plus energy, plus intensity of emotion, plus love. People say so. I think there's a collection of things that are probably involved there.
I think the love part is that it's for the right intention. But I've heard some people say it's just intention, and I just don't buy that. Well, for one, whoever had the most fans at the ball game would probably win. And I have seen a mother just absolutely adamant that her child was going to live, and didn't happen.
Yeah. One of the things that that I've also learned over the last 20 years of research, you know, is that the spirit, the soul, the consciousness that we all are aware of that we have, it does not end when our physical body dies. It continues on. And there's lots of evidence for that in my book. But the other part of that is that then these consciousnesses, these intelligences, can also exist without the body. You know, there's a, and actually in my theory, there's a way now to begin to understand how that can be. So what's really interesting is that when prayer is involved, when intention is involved, when trying to improve things is going on with lots of people, that we may have help from higher levels, that these consciousnesses are around us, people call them spirit guides, angels, whatever, I think there's actually, our science is getting to the point where we'll start to be able to understand and justify some of those things to those people who need explanation. And as I'm sure you know, spirit photography, for example, now is starting to show these things up. So my point is that when we're trying to change the future, we may have a lot of help from higher levels.
I also believe in concurrent universes because I think what happens in the etheric, we tend to manifest mechanically. If you think about old telephone wires, used to be one voice, one wire, and now they have these fiber optic cables that can carry hundreds, thousands of voices at one time, just change it to a different frequency. So I think in our concurrent universes, that's where we see ghosts and hear information, and we kind of sort of touch in between the universes. And there are people who have the ability to step into that other frequency into that other dimension.
Right.
But there's a payback. We did a study and found out that those people are very, very sensitive physically. For instance, a lot of them have hypoglycemia. That their sugar levels, normal is like 80 to 120, but their normal is like 96 to 102. So they're very, very sensitive physically, but that gives them the ability to drop over and talk to these other dimensions or see them or be there.
I agree completely with that, Sherry. The concurrent universe idea is actually part of my theory, too. That's why the book is called The Synchronized Universe. In the last chapter on the theory, I explain how what happens is when you allow these particles to interact over large distances, what happens is they become synchronized. And so the particles that we think of as our universe are really the ones, the part of the energy that's synchronized. So we see them and they see us. We think that's all there is, but it's not. It's really just the part that happens to be synchronized at a certain phase, at a certain frequency. And there are many, many, many other universes that exist right in the same place at the same time, but at a little bit different frequencies. And so it's a very similar idea to what you just said.
Well, it's like dog whistles. Our ears don't hear it, but our brain does. Mm-hmm. And you can demonstrate this simply by shaking your hand and moving it really, really quick, and you've got eight fingers, you know?
Exactly.
And I don't see how anybody could not believe in reincarnation if they've ever read Ian Stevenson's book, 10 Cases Suggesting of Reincarnation. The evidence that he gathered and the answers, and this young kid pointing out the guy who killed him and showing his wife where the hidden safe was and knowing the combination. I mean, how could people deny that? But they do.
Well, I think a lot of people who deny it haven't really looked at the data. They don't go out and look up the papers and look up the books and read them. As you know, those 10 cases are just the tip of the iceberg for Stevenson. He did thousands of cases. And when you start reading those cases, I agree with you. You can't read those cases and not believe it.
Well, a lot of times people's education gets in the way, and you said that, and a lot of times our belief system. I found one and only one out of hundreds of reviews on your book, and the one very negative one said you're going against God.
Well, yeah, I know. And that person thinks that he has a private line to God, and he knows what God's thinking, the rest of us don't. I know.
Well, I have this definition of God. I think God is all sentientness in one pot. And I think flowers and rocks are just slow energy forms, maybe. And maybe they're just vibrating so fast we think they're slow.
Yeah.
But everything in one pot that has a vibration and a frequency that is sentient, that to me is God. And we're all part of the pattern.
Yeah, I agree.
So here's all this stuff going on, and if people would open themselves to it, we quit fighting about who's right and who's wrong, but just look at it, feel it, know the evidence, and then we're going to move to this harmony kind of world, which if we all were in agreement, you think it'd be a dull world?
I think one of the big lessons that people are learning at this time is about discernment.
Yes.
Because we have all this, we have the wonderful internet with all kinds of sources of information. We have our news media, if you choose to, believe them. And we have all kinds of other, directions and different types of information, but people need to sort out what's true and what's not true. And that requires you to develop some intuition and also to do some digging, to start reading different kinds of books, read different kinds of papers, different sources of information, and figure out for yourself what you believe. There's always powerful groups that want you to think a particular way for their benefit, to give them power. And so people need to understand they have to think for themselves and develop that inner knowing, that inner discernment. So I think that's really one of the big lessons right now.
If they want you to shut off incoming information, run the other direction.
Right.
And this is why people should buy your book, so they can get this information.
Well, thank you. And you know, my website is www.synchronizeduniverse.com. Synchronized is with a Z. Synchronized is hard for some people to spell, so it's S-Y-N-C-H-R-O-N-I-Z-E-D, universe.com. If you go there, there's a link. You can buy the book there, or, as you say, on Amazon. And appreciate that. Yeah.
Read the reviews. You'll buy it. I have a question from another listener. What do you consider the most important gaps in modern scientific thinking that you've uncovered?
Wow. Well, where do I start?
We can talk about all of them. We can do two or three shows if you want to just start with one.
Well, I'd be happy to. I think to me, the biggest issue is the one I mentioned in terms of it's just important to kind of go back and revisit the basic assumptions on quantum physics, because it's really connected with a lot of the paranormal phenomena that our physics really needs to go back and redo the quantum mechanics theories from the foundational level on up. But I think right now probably one of the other big issues that connected, these are all connected questions, you know, and I could go on for a long time and it's hard to know where to start, but is human consciousness. I mean, science today pretty much tries to leave out human consciousness because it has no idea how to deal with it. And yet, physics today claims that human consciousness is really important to understanding physics. You know, you have this this old idea that in quantum mechanics, it's the observer. When the observer looks at the experiment and, you know, looks at the result, that's when the quantum mechanical wave function collapses. You may have several possible states that the system can be in, and all of them are alive and they're all real. But once you look at the experiment, it causes a collapse into one state. So human consciousness is kind of built into quantum physics, and yet once the physicist says that statement, then he ignores consciousness after that and has no idea how to deal with it. What's happening now with people like Hal Puthoff and other scientists who have been working in the paranormal for years, there's an understanding that we have to face consciousness. It has to become part of physics. Physics has to deal with it. And that's where the whole foundations of quantum theory have to then change. They have to become more broad, this connectedness between things that are nearby and things that are far away, this interaction that I referred to earlier. That becomes necessary to deal with if you want to handle consciousness. So that's kind of like a deep underlying issue. Once we understand that we are connected to each other, to the distant stars, to every other particle in the universe, these other dimensions, if we understand that, that's a whole different view of who we are as human beings. It's a much more spiritual view because we understand that we're much more than this simple physical body, you know. And once we understand that, that opens the door for people to understand reincarnation, you know, that life is not this, you know, 7 years or something on this earth, but it's actually unending, and it involves higher dimensions and all the other levels. So I think that it opens the door to a lot of the other information that people need to look at.
I hope these things aren't flukes. If they happen, there's a scientific explanation. We just don't have it yet, and that's what these good people are working on. But I think some of what is causing it to lag behind is some of the people out there claiming to do things they can't, claiming to know things or to say things. Like, there was an article recently about a camp where people go to talk to their dead loved ones, and they found all of these hidden microphones in the people's rooms. And that's where they were getting their information. Now you have something like that going on, and then everybody gets a bad name that can do it legitimately.
Yeah, and of course you had these faith healers, you know, in the big tents, tent revivals, things like that, for many years doing the same types of things, you know, tricking people, because they can't do it for real, so they fake it, and it's all for money. And yeah, sure, that goes on, and I think it's really important that there's more discernment comes in again. People need to take a look when someone claims an ability. Take a look at the information, look behind the scenes, and figure out, is it real or is it not? But when you start doing that, one of the things I was surprised by is how much of it is real, how much hard data is real. So I put my book together to try to collect together the best evidence among really hard data to back up these phenomena.
I remember when I went to college and in a psych class, one of our paper was prove where creativity comes from. You know, how can you do that? We know there's creativity because we see the evidence, but you cannot tell how it happens
right
in a body or in a brain. And if you can't tell and you can't prove it, therefore it doesn't happen, but here it is real, because you know the definition of, you know, somebody creates something that's unlike anything else. They are being creative.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really prove it. I use that often with scientists who say you can't really prove what's going on.
One of the things I don't think scientists realize how much the paranormal is involved in the life of successful scientists. I mean, I'm sure that this would bother some of them to hear, but I mean, Isaac Newton and people like that, I mean, they dabbled in the occult, they dabbled in the paranormal. I was mentioning the theory of the atom, you know, that Niels Bohr produced, that started 20th century quantum mechanics. He got that from a dream. He woke up out of a dream. He'd been standing on the sun, watching these planets whirl around him, tied to the sun by these flaming cords, and he woke up and suddenly realized he'd been inside an atom, and that's what he was seeing, and he sat down and wrote the Bohr theory of the atom. And there's countless examples like that where people have had ideas that changed scientific history, and they got them through paranormal means. And, you know, most of the great ideas come in flashes. They don't come from laboriously working something out. They come instantly. And you can't explain that if you think of, you know, a linear universe. That comes from outside.
Well, it's the idea. Then we go back to the lab and try to prove it using math. I think math is just an incredible, incredible tool. Mm-hmm. So many things we can do with it. It's absolutely concrete for our data. We can make inferences from it, and we can predict from it. So I think a lot of what we believe comes down to math.
Well, we have to. Yeah, it's a language. It's a way to make our statements very precise, and we can make predictions from it, and that enables us to test. So we can check ourselves, and that's the great advantage of science, is that it's a procedure where you can, if you have a theory, you don't just argue like they did back in the Middle Ages about how many angels are on the head of a pin. You make your math theory, you make your equations, you make your predictions, then you go into the lab, you test them, and, you know, somebody's right, somebody's wrong, and if you're wrong, then you change your theory and go back and try again. So the wonderful thing about science is it is connected with experiment and connected with reality, so we don't just kind of go off on a philosophical tangent. Unfortunately, I think the problem with science today is that a lot of physicists aren't following that pattern. They're not following the rules. I mean, the people doing string theory, even some of the people doing relativity on cosmology, the universe, the physics of the universe, they can't test their ideas. In string theory, they can't calculate a lot of times what it is that can be measured. So they work for years and years and years building these wonderful philosophical towers of, you know, in the air. And I think if they would just take a look at some of the data that you and I are aware of, it would force them to go back to the drawing board and change physics.
Well, math is also a constant in every language. People understand the concept, you know, 2 and 2 is 4.
Uh-huh.
So it's a language that we can use to express who we are, what our patterns are, and everything can be boiled down to math. I think frequency can become math, sound mm-hmm. can become math.
Mm-hmm.
Even thoughts, that if you speak them, they can become math.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
You had mentioned string theory. How does that fit into all of your, what your findings, right and wrong?
Well, what I see is, you know, that I think physicists are starting now to become a little bit disillusioned with string theory. A couple of books have come out in the last year or two questioning the whole notion of string theory. And I think the problem is because it's a very complex mathematical structure that was built on a few assumptions, and it's been very difficult to test these ideas experimentally. And at the same time, one of the foundational notions that was used for string theory is that Einstein's theory of gravity is correct. And they were trying to unify that with the theory of particles to bring them all together into a unified, theory. And so it was a noble idea, but I think that it's been 30 years now, and some of the smartest mathematicians on the planet have been working on the string theory, and there haven't really been many breakthroughs or much to speak of in terms of results to confirm that that's the right direction. And in the meantime, we're finding lots of anomalies, the paranormal phenomena, lots of different things that don't fit into string theory. They don't even fit into the assumptions of string theory. So I think that the questions are starting to arise, what about those other directions to look that you guys are not looking at? Maybe you should go back and take a look there. I was mentioning before the whole idea of quantum mechanics, of our present quantum theory idea. That's string theory just kind of assumes that. It takes that as an assumption. But what if it's wrong? What if there's a deeper way of looking at the universe, and quantum mechanics is kind of a superficial average, but there's something deeper? Then that would mean the string theory may have to go back to the drawing board too. So I think that there's some restlessness among physicists that are getting kind of worried because there's a huge investment in string theory, and so far the results, are kind of marginal.
We have two questions from our audience, but I have two questions that I want to ask.
Okay. Well, since you're the moderator,
I get to do mine. Well, we have enough time. I'll ask their questions.
Okay.
All of the stuff that we've talked about, how do you think the people are going to be able to benefit from bringing all of this out in the open?
Well, I mean, the first answer to that, I have a younger brother who, when he was little, he was fascinated by things in the paranormal, okay? Now, this is not something our family discussed. I grew up in a small town in the South. We went to Methodist church and Sunday school every day, every week, every Sunday, but this was something just out of his own curiosity. He loved to research ESP and psychic phenomena and things like that, hypnosis. And he called me up a couple years ago, and he said that when he became a teenager, he got very discouraged because people made fun of him for being interested in all these things. Oh, that's just a bunch of hooey, forget about that. And so he put it aside, and he was reading my book one night, and he realized that all those things actually were genuine, and that he was actually on to something, and now he was going to go back and start studying those things again. So I think that as our society becomes more aware that these other phenomena are part of who we are as humans, they're not magical, they're not occult, they're not evil, they're just part of the dimensions of who we are as human beings, that opens up, gives us permission to develop our abilities, to become more psychic, more sensitive, more aware, and so I think it'll change our ability to use these things and to study them.
Well, I can see from the reviews that your synchronized universe certainly has opened a lot of people to this. Give us a hint about your new book. Is it along the same lines?
Yes, the one. When you go from the old physics, the conventional science, to a new science where the paranormal, remote viewing, ESP, distant healing, things like that happen, the glue, the bridge that allows you to connect one with the other is called subtle energy. It's what the Hindus call prana. It's what the Chinese call qi. It's what the Reiki masters use in healing. It's energy that is of that form. And that energy really is the piece that's left out of the old physics. and that's the piece that when that is present, then the magic happens. And so that's what I'm trying to focus on in the second book, is to show how that subtle energy fits in. And of course, I'm focusing on healing, energy healing, and so the new physics ideas that are connected to it, because that to me is the bridge that gets us to the new science.
So you were talking about the actual physics, and this new one's going to be the practice of it.
Yes, I'm really focusing a lot about healers, a lot about Qigong masters and energy healers and spiritual healers and different modalities of healing, which is one way this energy gets used. Then I'm also talking some about the science. There are also hard scientists who've looked at this energy as well. People like Dr. William Tiller, who used to be a professor at the University of at Stanford.
Yes.
So, you know, a lot of hard scientists are also doing experiments on this energy, trying to understand it. So I'm trying to kind of pull together the best evidence, again, from different perspectives to help understand this type of energy.
Do you have a working title?
I'm going to hold that for right now because it's a little bit in flux. So it'll be on that. When things kind of get firmed up, I'm hoping by December, when things get firmed up and the first draft is all finished and we're kind of down to the wire, I'll put it on the website. So if you check Synchronized Universe website, I'll pass it to you then. How's that, Sherry?
Okay, and let's ask Heather to have you back then.
Okay, that'd be great.
Are you available for speaking engagements? One of our listeners wants to know.
I'd be delighted, yes.
How can I get in touch with you about that?
Let's see. The simplest way is my email address. Now, the website, as I mentioned, is synchronizeduniverse.com. There's a contact link there to get the email, but I'll give you the email. I'll spell it out here. It's my first name, Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, then underscore sign, then middle initial V as in Victor, then underscore sign again, then last name Swanson. So if you can remember Claude V. Swanson, put the underscore signs, and that's at yahoo.com. Or just go to the website, and the contact link is there.
Do you have a schedule of events where you're appearing on your website?
I do. Right now, I'm a little behind. I've been trying to just stay at home and write the book. right now, they're starting to fill up for next year. I've got four or five events for next year. They're not on the website yet. They will be in a few weeks probably. But I have several next year that I've already committed to, and I'll be updating that. But right now I've been trying to just focus on the book, and I'm planning to do a sort of speaking tour and a book signing tour next year once the second book gets out.
Do you have things on your website like speeches or articles or videos, CDs, anything like that?
There is a video you can buy if you use the same link as for purchasing the book. It'll take you to the order fulfiller I use, and there's a video available there. But I haven't really produced very many, so I'm working on that.
We have 2 minutes, and one of our listeners wants to know where you stand on the controversy about cold fusion.
Cold fusion is 100% real. It's very simple. the first discovery or announcement was made in 1989 by two electrochemists, one of them very eminent and respected. Department of Energy immediately gave contracts to two groups of physicists who they were already supporting for another form of energy that's like competing with cold fusion. In a big rush, within a few weeks, they both did experiments, one at MIT, one at Caltech, that supposedly disproved cold fusion. We now know that the MIT group actually hoaxed their data. They had three drafts of their paper. The first two drafts showed they were getting positive energy production. In the third draft of their paper, they subtracted out the average amount of energy to show a zero energy production. So that was not an honest result. So they were actually getting energy production, but they claimed they were not. In the meantime, over 500 labs around the world have verified different aspects of cold fusion. There are many devices today. There's a magazine called Infinite Energy that was started by Gene Malov, who was at MIT during all that period and wrote a very good book called Fire from Ice about the whole cold fusion thing. It's very real. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not very popular with the powers that be because it's not oil.
I've got a dozen more questions I want to ask, but our time is up. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being on the show. We will certainly have you back.
My pleasure, Sherry. My pleasure.
What happens to these scientists that that fake their data like that?
Well, they probably get more grants.
Oh, geez. And these were people who were in direct competition.
You know, it's a difficult system out there, you know. It's a difficult system.
Well, it's been a great show, and please join us tomorrow on BBS Radio, Monday, 8:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 Pacific, for Vocal Profiling Live. We are going to talk more about relationship compatibility. Vocal announcement. So for Dr. Swanson and Terry Edwards, thank you for joining us.